instead of chasing a career or chasing people or chasing network, I need to chase my purpose. When I found my why, the how kind of followed. I never met anyone to ask for anything. I still don't meet anyone for asking anything. Sometimes I can't get myself to say I'm an actor because I feel that's one of the things I do. But who am I? I'm a seeker. I do dabble and I do a lot of things and I have no qualms about like failing in any one of them. What is failure really now? So whilst I like a routine, I also like that routine to have spontaneity. I think at work, I've stopped craving validation or shabashi from others, as you say. And it's very hard.
Nakul Mehta is a storyteller. He's also an actor who's found so many different avenues to express himself. And even beyond that, as a poet, as someone who's really worked in fine-tuning his craft. And fine-tuning that craft also has found ways to express himself as a human being, you know, as a father and as a partner. And we talk about all of that in today's episode. But before we go into that, I want to make sure you hit subscribe and smash that bell icon. Straight into my chat with Nakul. Whenever I meet you, there is a vibe you resonate, which is of someone who is extremely articulate and very sure of yourself, is what I've always felt when I've met you. And I always wondered where that comes from, or is that me reading it differently?
Wow, extremely sure of myself. No, that's not true at all, man. Articulate also, I'm not sure. Oh, interesting. No one's actually said this to me. Articulate a bit, maybe. But sure, I'm not actually. I'm always second-guessing myself, man. I'm always second-guessing what I'm doing is right. What I've done is right. Is this a fluke? How many years can be a fluke? And I think it comes from a sense of... I've always had the outsider syndrome. So my father served the Indian Navy and I was this child who went to a new school every year. I changed 10 schools. So you were thrown like to new kids every year, right? So I always felt like the outsider. Then I came to Bombay. I went to a pretty posh school. And suddenly from a CBSE medium, you go to this really cool school in Juhu. And I felt like an outsider there. It took me a while to settle. By the time I settled, I graduated. And then I decided to pursue the arts. And anyone who pursues arts, initially wants to be a film star because, who wants to be India's, number one TV star? You want to be a film star. I felt like an outsider there because the only association we've had with films is my parents took me to the theater. So we're an audience. And then I decided like when I had my first failure as such, my first film didn't do well at all. It was also a terrible film. And when I finally figured out why I want to do what I want to do, and I decided to say, hey, I want to be a working actor. And the idea is to be able to engage with people and to be able to tell stories and hopefully have some kind of impact on them, is when I did television. And I felt like an outsider there because I didn't come there to do this in the first place. And it's been a good 10 years. I've done a lot of television. And in the material sense of the world sees it as success. But I'm always thinking of myself as an outsider. You know, how long will this last? So when you say you look like a guy who's sure, I don't know how that's coming, man. I'm not.
That's always what I've seen. But maybe it's also because the more you were talking, I was thinking, so I've always felt like an outsider.
Yeah.
I come from a small coastal town. Now it's a city called Kakinada in the coast of Andhra Pradesh. Grew up there. Half of my family doctors, half of them engineers. Doctors stayed in India, engineers went to America. Straightforward scenario. From there, I ended up in Bangalore for my 11th and 12th. Go from small town, seem like a cool person in a smaller town. Come to a city, you are the most uncool person
around. I feel you.
You're judged for everything you do, for how you speak, how you dress, the music you listen to. And it took me years to get over that. And then I leave all of that to go do engineering and I didn't do that well. And then Pune to study public relations, ended up moving to production and then MTV. And again, moved to MTV, feel like Again, you come to a place where you thought you'll be a cool person, but everybody there is cool anyway.
It's cooler, yeah.
Yeah, and so I maybe the outsiderness resonated, but I feel through, when you're an outsider, I feel you have a different perspective on things, which doesn't push you to follow what everybody else is doing.
The conventional.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you always tried to like stay away from the conventional path? Has that been a thing
for you? I had no other option. I realized very early on, I think, that failures have been my biggest lessons. And I learned that instead of chasing a career or chasing people or chasing network, I need to chase my purpose. And this came to me, I thought it came to me late in life, although this was in my early 20s. And I thought, damn, I'm late to this. But I think post my first big failure in sort of the societal sense is when I figured out why do I want to do what I want to do? And it took a lot of like digging in. It took, I ended up finding my spiritual foundation, which I practice Buddhism, Nichiren Daishonin. And in a lot of ways, that sort of propelled me towards figuring out what do I want to do and why why behind. And I think when I found my why, the how kind of followed, right? And the why is so sure, is so clear, that I realize that the conventional way of how never came to me, right? So I realized back in the day, when I was trying to say, hey, let's try to be an actor, networking meant going to parties, trying to make a conversation. I think when all of that changed to just getting to know people as human beings and being genuinely interested, which I deeply am. And maybe that comes out as being short, but I'm not. I'm just genuinely curious about knowing. I think when you find new ways of doing the same thing. And I think that new way also, I can't take credit for saying it's new, because it's a combination or like a cumulative thing of so many different minds you're meeting or you're seeking or you're reading or you're learning from. But I think like that has probably been my strength, because you're an outsider and none of the regular stuff like applies to you. You find your own ways of like figuring things.
You spoke about this word, which I feel, I mean, I have a personal thing, which is networking, right?
Right.
I think across professions now, I think at some point, some professions had to do it for sure, but I feel now across professions now, especially with what you have to put out on social media and even in person, there's a need to, you have to go network, you have to make connections, you have to be out there. I remember when we started our company off, when I started Glitch off years ago, people told me you have to go with a stack of for visiting cards and you can only come back once you've given them all away. I realized nobody ever called me back for a visiting card years ago. Yeah. I realized that there's no point. And the day I stopped doing that, as I walked into someone's office and I saw my card was torn and somebody had used it to make the filter for their cigarette, which they had rolled just now in front of me without realizing it was
no
my card.
No way.
And I'm like, I took that as a compliment. So we seem to be making very good, like good quality cards that they're using it that way. But there's this pressure to network, which I think it just told to us, you need to be out there and keep meeting people for, I want to say, what you can gain from them.
Yeah, absolutely right.
Once you kind of take that away, it becomes far simpler, right? You're just meeting people for meeting people.
I also think it's such a bastardized word, right? Like, I think it's wonderful to seek people and seek their mind and seek like, and be available to them, I think. And once that switches in your head, not only switches when I think you kind of find yourself and stop listening to the world. Again, I think that happened in my late 20s. And then I realized I never met anyone to ask for anything. I still don't meet anyone for asking anything. But I like to meet. And there's something you always get, if not today, 6 months from now, a year from now. And I've always found myself like richer by these experiences. I can't like put it down to like logically, isse kya fayda hua hai zindagi mein? But fayda ye hua hai ki you stop thinking about fayda, which is where I want to be,
And that whole fayda piece also is that, na? Is that you feel it's transactional.
Yeah.
Is tumse kuch milne wala hai, isliye main baat kar raha
hu. Correct.
But when you believe that you're talking to someone because you're interested, like you said, you're curious, yeah, I think the other person also feels like, okay, there's no pressure. So I'm not, there's always this point when I don't know if you've met people like this. When you shake their hand, they don't leave your hand for some time.
Oh, yeah.
There's that shake where the hand keeps going like this. And then you're trying to pull it away. And oftentimes, many conversations are like that. You know it's a networking piece. You know they're talking to you for a specific reason. And you want to escape. But if you're interested in asking questions, then people stay.
Yeah.
I noticed that people kind of feel they warm up a lot more in that sense. Have you always been a social person? Have you?
I think so. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you think that the... Because you had to go from school to school, that almost became your mechanism for saying,
We grew up, at a time when there was no social media, no Facebook. How would you stay in touch with people? And how would you break into newer sort of, like I studied in Andaman Nicobar for 2 years. And suddenly in the middle of my fifth grade, I'm there in a new, like very different kind of, like back then it was a different place. I felt always like being the social person kind of helped me get like breakthrough a little bit, like initially. So I think I was also, it came from somewhere, my love for performing arts. I've been telling jokes is what my family tells me and friends tell me since I was 4 years old. So I think all of that stayed. It's just that I never thought that I would make this my profession, because I come from a very educated sort of academically inclined family. So I was studying to actually do a business degree and go to Wisconsin Madison, got a scholarship there, etc. But I think this was always at the back of my, and it kind of, yeah.
So when you started off in your journey in acting, tell me about that first period of time. How was that? Like, you go in with preconceived notions generally in any career, right? How was that period for you?
It was terrible, man. I don't know what I was thinking. I was so influenced by my surroundings. I remember everyone at that point used to wear, like heroes used to wear boots, right? Just to look taller and like be more heroic, I started wearing boots. They used to speak in a certain twang, and then you see everyone in Bombay doing the same. Anyone who's wanting to break out as an actor, you start doing that. I went to an acting course, or one of those filmy courses, and I said, that's when I realized that something is off. It's not me. But I remember not being me when I started out. I always wanted to fit in. And it was a period of about 3 years where I was trying to be everyone. There used to be you remember Estella was Oris at one point.
Yeah.
It used to be like the hub of like, it used to be the Soho back then.
Yeah, yeah. Oris in
Friday nights at Oris.
It was always like, you have to get in or you have to be out. People standing outside or trying to get inside that tiny place, which was terrible in hindsight, was where everybody wanted to be.
Yeah, just seen, right? So I think I don't know what I was chasing. And when I look back, I think it was just a person who really didn't know what he wanted. But now when I look back, I think I make sense of it, that I needed to go through that period and I needed to see all of that today, reflect and say, hey, I don't think I started off knowing too much. I didn't know myself well. And hence I was just trying to catch on to trends or understand like, how does one fit in? Again, fit in was like the constant theme.
You spoke about your first big failure. Was that the pivotal point when it shifted?
I think so. Yeah. I started with doing a lot of advertisements, and that was a great run for me. I was studying Bachelor's of Management in Bombay, and I was doing a lot of ads, made some decent amount of money. I think the first film happened when I was about 23, 24. And it was as Bollywood gets. And to an outsider, it seemed like a great sort of breakout film, because it was being made by the producers of Omkara right after Omkara, right? And that's all I could see. It made sense. Music was Vishal Bharadwaj, etc. But I always knew the script didn't fit right. And I had those questions even back then. I just didn't have the belief.
To ask, yes.
No, I asked. I questioned. I didn't get answers which made sense to me, but I don't think I had belief to say, hey, this doesn't make sense. And I think I did that, and when it was coming out, I think I pretty much got a call from every big producer in the city saying, see you on Monday, come, we have to sign this contract. Like two big producers, film came out on Friday. I don't think I had the understanding then to realize that we made a terrible film, because you're too close to it, you're 24. My phone never rang after that Monday. No one called me for 6 months. And I think those 6 months kind of became like the point where I started seeking and started looking out for okay, what about me now? How do I learn from this? How do I grow from this? Why do I want to do this? Am I even doing the right thing? Am I at the wrong place? So that failure actually has been like the bedrock of everything which I have managed to seek in life. And yeah, I look at it very fondly now. Yeah.
Because I feel like, we all talk about failures, but also like what we often don't talk about enough, I feel, is the learnings you have right after that failure. Because there's a period, like you mentioned, that 6 months. It's that period when you kind of almost like rewire yourself. You figure out how you progress in life and what your, like you use the word, what your why is and what your purpose is. Do you feel your purpose would have been as strong if it wasn't for that period?
I've thought about this. No, I don't think. I'm glad that success didn't come so early. I don't think I was ready as a human being. I don't think I was equipped for it. I had no idea what I was doing. It was more like going with the flow, thinking you know your shit. Someone also decided to put money on your thing, on what you think is your shiz. And I don't think I was ready for it. And it didn't come to you because you weren't ready for it. And that period of introspection, that period of not having work you wanted to do, about 3 years post that was beautiful because it made me really go inside. It made me work on my skills. I don't think I was good enough as an artist to have that kind of money being put on a launch film, not at all. I don't think I knew I wanted to do what I wanted to do to be here for long enough. I think I started seeking after that because no one came to me. No one offered me anything. The path of seeking started when people stopped calling me. And that to me has been the greatest gift and learning from that project. That today it doesn't matter what you've achieved in the past or what you're doing. But the day this desire or hunger to seek dies, I won't know what to do. So I think like when people say, who are you? What do you do? Sometimes I can't get myself to say I'm an actor because I feel that's one of the things I do. But who am I? I'm a seeker. And I'm on that journey. And through that journey right now, I'm entertaining, I'm acting, and it gives me a lot of joy. It takes care of a lot of things. But is that me? I still like second guess it.
It's an interesting term, right? You earlier mentioned that you're a curious person and you're seeing a seeker. And I'm a firm believer that curiosity is almost the bedrock of everything we can do in our life, right? Everything, like from being able to build a relationship to being able to kind of move in the right direction in life. Everything has to start with curiosity. And even purpose kind of comes from that. Is that why you feel that you dabble? I wouldn't even say the dabble. I would say your range of interests and your range of arenas in which you've actually been able to express yourself creatively are quite widespread. You're not straight, okay, this is my lane, I'm sticking to this.
No.
You always go like across the board.
I can't because I don't know who I am really. Like I said, when people say, you're an actor, you're, I don't know who I am, but maybe storyteller could be one of the ways to express because that says so much. Right. And I want to do a bunch of things. I don't want to be limited to being an actor who's, done work on Indian television or now who's also doing work digitally or, I live in a country. I am affected by what's happening, politically, social, culturally, and that has to find a way. Either I could just go out and use social media to shout about it or use my art sometimes. I remember the pandemic period initially was a very dark period, with everything which was going on in our country politically. I think Sushant's passing away also kind of hit home. I didn't know him personally at all, but you just felt alone as an artist in this city, an outsider. I think all those things led to me and my friend Ajay, we ended up doing, he writes, on a whim, he said, why don't you read out one of these because you really connected. And we ended up doing a series of poetry and it ended up becoming a series called Too Much Democracy, which Roshan saw and then said, why don't you produce it, put it on our platform. So none of that is strategized. So I don't have a strategy anymore, but what I want to do, I want to find ways to express myself. And I think all of us have so much inside of us. I think we are lucky, some of us, that you're an artist and you're in touch with these things you're feeling. And I feel so blessed that I have ways to express it. so many other people who are doing so well in their lives but don't have ways to express what they're feeling. And so, yeah, it's I do dabble and I do a lot of things, and I have no qualms about like failing in any one of them. Kya hoga? What is failure really now, you know?
I feel it also comes from the fact that most people are scared, or rather, they're worried about being judged, right?
Ha.
If you do, I mean, you know, it's like you could be great at one thing, but if you do one more thing which you're not good at, oh, I'm going to get judged for it. It's like, you know, achhe khase the, kyun kar rahe? You know, all that will happen, right? I was talking to someone the other day saying, you're running a company, now you do a podcast. I'm like, I can do both, right? But the question automatically becomes like a thing. Why do you start something new when you already have something? And people are worried about that statement coming towards them. And also, I think self-doubt plays into that as well. Does it play into your head, self-doubt?
Of course it does. But like again, I said, I am someone who's always second-guessing everything I've done. Second-guessing in the sense, not like in terms of why did I do it or why, how did it work, but oh, amazing, wow, this also worked. Oh, wow, I did this and it was a good run. And I think it, like there was a shift in me from the pandemic onwards where I started being very grateful for the small victories. Before that, it was always, oh, I have so much to achieve. I lost 3 years of my life to just sort of, you know, like after the first sort of failure in life in that sense, that I have to make up for it. And I realized there's no making up. You know, today when I look back, I was probably the quiet kid in my school in, you know, in Juhu, in Bombay. When I look at people and when I meet some of my colleagues, classmates, I feel like, I mean, everyone's done well for themselves in, you know, whatever way, but I feel so blessed that I have no baggage, firstly, of being from this industry. I have no baggage of having to run someone's business. I can go out and do, play different roles, do different things, take a break and do nothing. I mean, that's a privilege which I've, you know, I've chosen to build for myself. I think losing track of where we started this. Yeah. So in a way, I think I have stayed away from a structure, but I have also consciously allowed space and maybe serendipity to let it come into my life. So whilst I like a routine, I also like that routine to have spontaneity.
Exactly.
You know, it's hard to explain to people at times because they're like, "Acha, ab kya kar rahe ho? Aapka abhi show khatam ho gaya na? Ab kya kar rahe ho?" And a lot of people make like cool answers to say, "Acha, oh, I'm reading scripts. Main kuch nahi kar rahe ho." And I've earned doing nothing. This is, you know.
And then the question will be, "Kuch nahi kar rahe ho?"
Huh?
And it's almost like, that's also something to do now.
Yeah, it's hard to explain that, but I don't feel the need to put it in a wrapper and explain to people in a cool way. Main kuch nahi kar raha, genuinely kuch nahi kar raha.
I also feel it's because you've been on this in this period in your career where you've been working nonstop for a period of time.
Yeah.
And I feel when you do that, you need to take that, and this is me generally plugging the name of the show in every episode, saying you need to take a pause to kind of also look at, okay, because when you're running at that pace and you've been, I mean, I've seen the amount of work you put out in the recent past. And I'm like, okay, you need that to almost like recalibrate, reassess. But how has that period been for you? I think the last, almost like, how many years of back-to-back work has it been?
I mean, about 10, 11 years of 3 TV shows, over 1,500 episodes. I've taken breaks between each of them, but it's been
smaller.
Yeah, I mean, no, decent size breaks, but also in the breaks, it's not that I'm always doing something which is not television, but the growth happens then. The growth doesn't happen when I'm working because the one thing which I don't particularly enjoy about television is because having worked for a bit, I don't get to work with technicians or talent who come with the same level of motivation or inspiration as I do to my work. So I look out for that in other things. I look out for that when, you know, I meet you or I meet friends. I don't find that at work. And I hope this doesn't sound coming off high-handed because it's not. I genuinely miss that. So my in-betweens, in between those 3 shows where I live life, where I grow, where I take chances, I fail. Because I take all those learnings and go to TV. Right? People might think you don't need all of that on television. It's a fairly simplistic But I feel I take all my worldly learnings, my sort of understanding of the world, politics, pop culture, and try to layer it in what we do. And the beautiful bit about television, which I don't know how many people sort of genuinely know about this, is there's a great feedback loop you have with audiences, you know,
unlike on a daily basis.
On a daily basis. And I have the advantage of seeing people one-on-one also, because you step out in the world, you meet people. You get such beautiful feedback, and not about aap achha acting karte, achha dance karte, all of that. That's just superficial. But how, like the small things you try to build, socio-culturally, what it does to them. And that to me, I can't get doing anything else. You know, and I look out for meeting with my audiences, because I get a lot of feedback as a human being as to what my growth I may perceive is that reflecting in my work. For example, I was doing a show called Bade Achhe Lagte Hain, a fairly popular show. And this was very unlike Hero on TV. It was a feminist hero, almost like the heroine of the show. And TV is run by women, right? He was a very sort of anti-hero kind of a guy. And I would bring in a lot of my own understanding of feminism, equality, equal rights, etc., reading what's happening in the West. I think I was the first person to ever speak about the Me Too movement when it happened in the West, when Harvey Weinstein was called out. And I remember 2017, there was an award, biggest award there is for television, film, digital. And I was given an actor for Best Actor TV. I spoke about that and how I want to sort of make sure that any environment I'm working in, I am responsible, right? I remember the host of the show kind of laughed it out and said, hey man, this is Andheri. This is not, you know, the West. But when I look back now, he's going to feel stupid about what he did. I made my point because my entire fraternity was there, right? And this understanding was because I was seeking. I feel all of that, I'm able to somehow use social media, use my character, its one-on-one exchange with people, and apply it and see a feedback loop, which no other medium gives you. So I'm very thankful to television because it gives me this access. It's a barometer for me to understand what my growth has been from my first show to now.
Yeah.
How I'm able to experiment and put in my thoughts, ideas, and build this sort of an understanding of things.
I'm happy you said that, because I feel oftentimes you look at many aspects of what you do. I think, chal jayega, you know, you just do it this way. You don't add more to it, but I'm forgetting the exact line. Is that if I think it goes like, how you do everything is how you do anything, or how you do anything is how you do everything.
Absolutely.
How you do anything is how you do everything. Because even if you feel like this, you can just give 50% effort and do it. End of the day, it's you doing something, right? And if you don't put in that, if you're not done your best at it, if you're not added your two bits to it, I don't think you inside will be satisfied because you've not done it right. So I'm happy you say that, because it's so easy to say this will ye chal jayega.
Because technically 80% bhi chal jayega, but is that how you want? I want to have my coffee also. I want to really have my coffee and care for it. Like, I feel I used to use passion very loosely earlier. I feel passion sounds like, arey, you'll come with all that jazba and it's a big deal. But I feel if you genuinely care about what you do, you will find ways to put in your best and take everyone around you who's working on it. And you'll find ways to bring their level up to yours, you know, or take from them. So I deeply care about anything I do. Like, and sometimes so deeply that sometimes I feel like I've had co-actors tell me that it's okay, chill, take a pause. And it makes sense, because sometimes I'm heavily invested into what I do, which is a good and bad thing both. I need to learn to also just chill at times. But I think I take pride in the fact that I care, because not many people care about what they do in this world.
Why do you say that? I want to understand why you said that last line.
It actually comes from... So, I was in Goa a week ago, I was telling you, with my family. And I noticed the villa we had rented, there was a gardener working there. He's been working for 9 years. And I just saw him 6 days because I was doing nothing, just looking the sun come. Had the privilege of just being with my child, wife. There was no one to... It was run by a professional management company, but the gardener has been with the owners in the beginning. He came, did his job morning, 3 hours. Came, cut the grass, watered, cleaned the pool, did everything with a sense of structure, sense of discipline, and complete ownership. No one was looking at him. In fact, he was also entertaining. Sufi was hanging out with him, asking him questions. But he went about doing his job morning and evening. No one was looking. If he didn't like clean the poolers one leaf, I wouldn't care about it. I wouldn't be one of those guessing, ye care. And I was so amazed. And I was just thinking, he cares about what he does. No one is looking, right? And I loved that. I think when I got in the world, I see a lot of people do what they, and they're successful at what they do. You can't point a finger. But do they truly care about the smaller details? And I feel life is in the smaller details. Like 20 years from now, it's not going to matter how many hit TV shows I made or how many brilliant things you did in media. But what people would remember, what you would take, I think, or take away is how did you do it and what did that make you feel? And small example again, taking a deviation. About a year ago on my TV show, you know, initially there was a director with a very television mindset, which is, and I won't discredit him, but also TV is about execution. You're shooting 22 minutes of content every day. It's a lot of work. There's a lot of pressure on the director. So more than direction, he's executing things,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I remember we were doing a scene with two other actors, sort of lesser experienced. And one of them couldn't remember his lines, couldn't get things going. And I said, hey, let's do. And, you know, I'm probably the sort of the bigger stakeholder on the show. I said, also as a protagonist, you have to take ownership. I said, okay, let's do this again. And my director looked out and said, listen, we don't have time for one more. Who's going to answer? The producer. I need to take out minutes. And it was around lunch. I said, okay, why don't we break for lunch? You go have your lunch. Does anyone want to stay back and rehearse with the both of them? Two other people stayed back. The director just looked at me incredulously. Like, are you serious? Are you going to give up your lunch time to rehearse for somebody else? And I said, yes, I will. It's my show. I will. He walked away. Six of us stayed back. The chief assistant director stayed back. He didn't need to. Finished it, came back, had lunch, came back, did the scene. It was beautiful. The new kids did amazingly well. And I saw the director. He was shocked, but he was also appreciative. He's just not used to working like that. You know, what do I take back from that? That six people on that set cared. It's a hit show. People are going to remember it. But what I will take back is those six people, and that memory will stay with me forever. So I don't think everyone cares enough. And if he cared enough, it would be a different world. But I look out for that in people. And that's a big deal for me.
It's such an interesting thing you said right now about caring is, it's so easy to not care in this world. I feel it's much tougher to care. Because you can very easily not care about things and just go about... It's my, I have this chat with this gentleman who's the lift operator in this building, right? And I come up every time and I go down the lift. Every day I have a tiny 2-minute chat, which literally is three floors. And I notice that everybody comes in is just...
Yeah.
Right. And so he and I have the standard joke about saying how many people are going to have neck problems over time because they just in their phones. Or like some people just bang into the lift. But I notice that he... Although he can, and I've seen other you know, people who are, let's be honest, a lift operator's job is, I would say, by far one of the most, I can just imagine the claustrophobia time. He's never looking at something. Even if someone hands him a chai, he's sitting there. And I always notice that he does it with the, so when you talk about the gardener, the first person I remembered was him, because I've seen him often enough. And it's just that, it could be very easy for him to not care.
Yeah.
But he's noticing things and I feel that, and if you go, and obviously you go wider into the world and there's so many things which you can just kind of shield your mind from so that you don't have to worry about them.
Yeah, but protect yourself.
But it's far tougher to actually care and actually put in that.
Also far more beautiful, no?
Yeah.
Once if you,
yeah.
Like, I remember, I don't know, have you ever been to Surya Hospital? I don't know why I ask you this. No, okay. Sufi was born there, so... I remember the lift man from that hospital. He'd ask you, how are you? How are you feeling today? Because he knew I was staying there for 2, 3, 4 days. How are you feeling? Bacha kaisa hai? I mean, part of it you could say because he wanted a tip at the end of it. No, but he genuinely asked me, how are you feeling?
Yeah. You can also sense it when it's a kid's
question. You can sense
it.
And I will tell you, once you are a parent, everyone will ask, everything centers around the child and the mother on how she's feeling, and like rightly so. No one ever asks the father, what are they going through? Because there are some emotions at play, right? And no one's ever asked. He was the only guy who ever asked me, how are you feeling?
It's actually funny you say that. I make a point of messaging anybody I know who is going to become a father or has just become a father, because same thing, I didn't have
anyone.
And I've spoken about this briefly in the show before, where I couldn't find any resource for me to learn from as a father, because all our dads did things, but I feel that we live in a very different world now, and you not just have the ability, you are actually a lot more hands-on in many aspects, and you want to also function that way. And I do that. I take them out for like, let's go out for lunch, let's go have a cup of coffee, let's go out and have a drink. This is what's going to happen. This is what your job's going to be, is my general thing for the last almost 5.5 years.
Oh, wow.
Because I feel that it's very tough to be a mother. I can
it
see
is.
That.
It is.
I don't think any father can come close to the amount of genuine effort, focus, and everything else that mothers have to do. But it's also very tough to be a dad. Because you don't know what your... Because let's be honest, did you know what your role was for 6 months?
I figured what my role was. My role was to just be there for my partner, because she was going through multitudes of emotions. Just be there for her. And she was supporting the baby. I was there for her.
And change diapers.
And change diapers, yeah.
That was continuous potty duty was mine.
Yeah. And burp.
And burp.
Yeah.
But it's and also emotionally, you don't know what you're going through, because you don't feel... I mean, for me, it's been different with both of my kids. You building a connection with your kid also becomes a process. It's not an instant process.
Which with the mother it is.
It's instant. There's not even a second gap there. It took me time to understand, A, what my role was. Secondly, what is my relationship with this new human being who I'm just trying to make sure they're alive. For 6 months, just make sure they're alive. That's all you're doing. And after that, they obviously start emoting and everything happens. But it's very unique to be a father in today's world, I feel. I think we're a generation of very unique fathers, because we're almost like the first generation of a different kind of fatherhood.
Yeah.
How do you look at fatherhood?
It's the best thing which has happened to Janki and I, to me. It's like suddenly... no other judgment in the world matters. No amount of success. But also, everything matters a little bit more. Like, I remember, I have this thing. Post the 3 years of having no work and then finding work and like very value-creating work and having won lots of laurels, I stopped caring about awards. It became second nature. For the last show I did before this, Ishqbaaz, I remember winning about 34 Best Actor awards across 3 years. India, London, everywhere. There came a point where I genuinely stopped caring. And I felt it also showed in the kind of interviews I gave after that and how I received it. I knew it mattered for my parents. You know, it was for them, it meant like sons achieved. I think post-Sufi and post-pandemic, everything is, oh my God, it is. It's not just mine. Somebody is going to look at this and... you know, probably be proud of it. I remember the first award I got for Bade Acche was again the same award function. But this time, this last year, which I again won a Best Actor at, and I was almost in, I could have broken down. And it's not that I haven't won this many times before. It's just meant so much more. And I didn't know where that emotion came from. It wasn't that I was ready for it. I was ready with the speech. I wasn't ready with emotion. It just came rushing in. Material success doesn't define me. I've also reached a place where I'm like, okay, how much money do you need? What do you guard more now? I want to be happy, man. I want to enjoy this cup of coffee. I don't know if this is middle age hitting, but I think parenthood has a lot to do with it. And just like, he's one person, like my greatest struggle in life right now is to be fully present in the moment. And I want to do that. I want to do that. With him, it's not a struggle at all. I can just see him do nothing and I'm there with him. And I want to be able to use it for every area of my life, with my partner at work, in a conversation with my driver. Why should be half-assed? Why should be more like, kaisa hai, chutti theek rahi, badhiya hai. You know, sometimes we'll go into a bit of posturing, you know, bosses asking, theek hai na, come, because you've seen people do that. I want to break those things down after, Sufi. I want to be authentic. Like, I also feel authentic is so overused. Like,
yeah,
sometimes,
oh my God. Yeah.
You know, like, how much is authentic? How much is performance authentic? But I just want to be how I am with him, because I am not like that with anybody else. I'm not like that with myself. I feel there is still a lot of truth I don't tell myself or guard myself. But with him, it's not, because he sees through. So it's changed me in a lot of ways. Yeah. And I've also become a bit of a, it's okay to say no to things. I never knew how to say no to things. I mean, I knew professionally I didn't want to do this. I knew that. I had clarity to refuse money or whatever came with it. I didn't know how to say no to someone asking for your time, because I said, wo to dena chahiye na. Now I very respectfully say it, and I assume the person will understand. And if they don't, that I don't, it's okay.
I feel also becoming a parent changes, like, isn't it, rewires you emotionally, right? Like, I wasn't a person who would express emotions, like, not a person who would cry or anything ever. Now I'm genuinely very, like, I can sit and, I think parents do this one creepy thing, and I understand it.
Which is?
I call it creepy, is you watch your kids sleep.
Oh my God, it's not a, it's the best thing
you
in the world.
You stand there and you watch this person sleeping, and you are going about it like, and you're like, I'm just imagining someone wake up and seeing this one person staring down at them. Can't help it. It's just, I don't know what it is about. And I have these conversations with both of my parents, saying, I get you guys more now than I ever did after I became a parent. I understand some of the things that I had issues with. But I still say I would do things differently, and you would do things differently with different people.
Yeah.
But I feel like I understand my parents a lot more today than I did when before we had
absolutely Leia or, would you be emotionally vulnerable in front of your kids?
I make it a point to be.
Yeah. Is it hard?
So my genuine tendency is that if I'm emotionally vulnerable, I am that person who will crack a bad joke and try to get out of it.
Correct, correct.
So for me, I'm at that point when the bad joke still comes there, but I try to hold off on not continuing the conversation. So I will still do that. Like, but the one thing we don't guard, I mean, Leia's obviously older, so she, you know, for her it's more, and son's just 6 months old, so is that they have to see all sides of their parents. You don't only show, like, you don't have conversations behind a door away from your kids. They're seeing us argue, they see us argue. They see us happy, see us happy. They have to be okay to see their parents hug and kiss each other. Something which I realize that you don't necessarily see as much. Like, my parents are pretty open about that stuff in general. So I don't think I face that. But I think generally, societally, you always feel like these are things kids can see, these are things kids can't see.
Yeah.
But for me, it's a lot more about being emotionally there without making it about me, which is the struggle. I very easily can make it about me and not about my partner or my kids.
Would you ever discuss a bad day at work or anywhere with her?
If she understands it, I do.
I'm sure she senses it.
Sometimes. So my daughter is very like me. So she can be very... So I understand her more than anybody else, because she has a lot of my... I never say bad traits. She has some of my slightly like weird traits, right? So she and I can both easily zone out in the middle of a conversation. and I can be very focused on what we want to do and not necessarily focus on what others need. And so it has to be an almost mental rewiring to figure out what everybody else needs. But thankfully, she has a fair bit of Pooja as well. So she's gotten a bit of... I feel Leia's a lot stronger than I am, because she can actually do things and she's a lot more focused. She's better at math, which is definitely not me. No chance in life. But it's that. How about you?
I want to be. So I think what something... One thing I want to definitely build on is I just don't want to be emotional in front of you. I want to be vulnerable in front of you. I feel I never saw that as a child, like around just not just my father, my men around me in general. Like, no one ever said, you failed at work, or you know, you didn't get a business deal. You never discussed it because it was your job to take care of it.
And you have to seem like you are.
You're in control, which also kind of brought in security and all of that, right? And subconsciously, you've picked those up, and like I've become a person who will. Good news I'd share with all of you. Stuff which is to be solved, I will take it head on. And I now want to change that after Sufi. It's been a conversation Janki and I have been having for a while. And it's very hard for me to do it. I feel it's my problem to solve and it's not hers. I don't want her to share it. I want to be able to share it with him that I failed. I did a terrible job at work today. The director called me out. I hope that doesn't happen. But I hope a bad day at work, I can share and say, Dada failed. My father didn't do that with me. No one around me I saw do that with me. But I think because of that, I've become, in a way, the same person. And I don't want to be that with him because I want him to grow up to be absolutely emotionally agile and vulnerable. It's okay to cry. And it's not only... It's cool to cry if you're watching a film, but you should also be able to cry if you're not feeling good about something. And I find that hard to do in front of people. And I want to change that with him.
Yeah, I can't cry in front of people either.
I want to change that.
Yeah. Do you think it's also about the relationship you and... it's 20 years now?
Say again?
It's been 20 years now?
20 years, yeah.
20 years, yeah.
11 years of marriage, 9 years of dating.
Do you think it's also the relationship both of you share that's really brought you to this stage?
Of course, in a way, yes.
Because I always feel it's about how you balance each other out that always leads to, I think realizations come eventually, but it's that balance that happens over time that brings you to it.
I mean, I think this is a conversation which Janki has been having with me forever. It was very hard for me to understand how does one open up about things which I don't want. Like there are, like I would always think there are things which you need to access and you need to solve. But I wouldn't see the merit in sharing it earlier. But I think in the last 3 years, we've been having a lot of these conversations. And we've never felt more sort of in alignment than ever before. And it's a superpower, man. And sometimes I think what makes us men not have these conversations, it is such a block. And it is so hard. Whilst it might seem like, "Arey, baati to share karni hai," it's not that. It's far more than that.
You know, I was watching this. I forget who was it. I was scrolling through Instagram and I happened to see it saying that when women have conversations, they face each other and have emotional things. When guys have conversations, we make fun of each other and we talk about everything apart from the stuff that is really eating away at us.
And right? Say, let's get a drink.
Yeah, let's get a drink, but talk about random stuff. We don't have to talk about anything which is actually relevant, right? And it's often a struggle to actually share that stuff. I feel it comes from that. We just genuinely, I feel culturally as men brought up to saying, shove it under the carpet, deal with it yourself, don't let the world see what you're going through. It's your problem to figure it out because, you know, be a man, you have to figure it out, but you can't.
And you don't have too many role models teaching you otherwise. And I have to say that, our common friend Nikhil Taneja is such a great example of being this guy, man. Every time I chat with him, which is not even very often, right? I've known him for a period of time. But we'd chat once in a while, and in every conversation, he would be vulnerable and share something which I would be afraid to share. And he's a great example, man. I want to be like that guy. So we don't have too many role models.
You said the last 3 years, and I want to pick on that. On many fronts, you spoke about the last three years.
I think for
a lot of us, the last 3 years made us, I think the entire COVID period made us almost like reassess how we live our lives, how our relationships function, how everything else. Do you feel it's this period? Because I know that my marriage with Pooja is the strongest it's ever been. When you were saying this, I'm like, that's exactly what happened. The last 3 years have been the strongest period of our marriage. Do you feel it's also because you genuinely sat down and you weren't... I think the world said you can't go meet them, you have to be at home. It was just that. You said to sit with each other and have that conversation. Do you think it was that for you?
Absolutely. I think we constantly talk about there's so many distractions living in a city like ours. And even if you aren't busy, like career-wise, you're busy, man. Like everybody is just busy. It's a circus. And I think the pandemic helped you just find, firstly, your own inner frequency. How do I even sort of meet my partner's frequency if I don't have, I can't tap into my own? And that has been my greatest struggle in a city like ours, in a profession which is ours, where success takes you to many places which people want you to go to. Reality bhi kar lo, naach bhi lo, dance show bhi kar lo, shaadi mein bhi aa jao. And one part of your ambitious mind says, haan haan karna yaar. Isliye to yahan aaye the, paise to banane hain, of course. The other part of your mind says, nahi, but that's not what I want to do. And in that jostling, and whilst, you know, you're married, you have a set of like family, you have friends, you have people you want to meet, there is very little time to just be, take a pause, listen to your own frequency. I think the pandemic gave us a chance to do that. There was no help at home also. She just, by great good design, she'd just gone to see her unwell son. And we were left to our own devices. We were cooking, cleaning, taking care of our parents on both sides, exercising, spending a lot of time together, and just I felt in the truest sense, we found connection like never before.
Yeah, same here. Because you suddenly took away, it was a reset. It was a reset to see that you might have been living your life a certain way, you might have been dealing with any relationship you have, any professional thing you had a certain way. And it just reset everything and said, what's essential to you in your life? And you suddenly looked at many things you would spend your time doing, saying, I didn't actually have to do those things. Like you said, the FOMO-ness went away. It's coming back. It's definitely come back in many ways, I think, across the world. For me, I have to stop myself now, because now the world's open. You can go to these things. You can, but it's just that it's, you got to wake up and say, is this what's essential for me? And I think it's just that, just being able to be open. And I've learned that from my interaction with Nikhil as well, like just genuinely how to again say authentic, although that I think I've found an alternative word for authentic.
Well, I'm glad you also don't resonate with it.
Just because I feel it's a bastardized term, because like you said, there's so much of being authentic and being vulnerable that becomes for show and not necessarily...
It's a performance also, right, at some point.
And the genuineness goes off when it's on overdrive. It almost find that balance of saying you're being genuine, but...
You're also seeing that I'm really being genuine.
Oh, no, I guess. That's also a thing. So I don't think there's any winning with that one there. If you look back at the last maybe 10, 12 years, what do you think you've learned the most?
Many things. I think one is people are essentially very giving. They want to help you. And they want to offer. I think they want to be there for you. It's just that they don't have sometimes the mechanism. Sometimes they may also be... Everyone has their own story. And everyone is coming from their own place. And I think I've begun to be less judgmental and give them the benefit of doubt. But I've learned that in today's time, you could literally reach out to anybody, courtesy social media. And most people, if they see that you're genuinely wanting to form a connection, or they're happy to give you their time. So I've begun to really believe, like my default mode now is not second guess people, but to believe in their goodness. Kuch nahi hua, hoga. Kuch kahani hogi uske piche, jo pata chal jayegi kabhi na kabhi, it's okay. That is one. Second is, I think we belong to an industry. I mean, now you're creating content as well, where everything is being judged, right? And at some point, it's so hard, however spiritually strong you are, not to fall into this. But I've realized that my barometer would be how I was last year, how I was 5 years from now, 10 years from now. Am I happier with myself? That is a barometer. Third is, in my 20s, I had a lot of friends and I would say acquaintances. And I remember Janki and I used to have, We used to live in a two-bedder apartment after we got married, and we used to have 75 people over three times a year having mad parties, right? And that gave us happiness. And maybe it did at that point, right? I think today I can count the people, maybe I can call if I have a problem at hand, if I need to rush Sufi to the hospital. And there are very few. And I'm very happy, I'm very okay with it. I don't seek validation in that sense. I've begun to appreciate and be so grateful for parents. Especially after Sufi and after the pandemic, I feel all of us realize that maybe this is it. At that point, I genuinely realized, if I don't work after this, if I never get an acting gig after this, will I be happy? And I said, yes, I will be. You know, I think all of this is just like, I think these are some of the things which have been distilled. Another learning has been that I think at work, I've stopped craving validation or shabashi from others, as you say. And it's very hard. I won't say I've 100% succeeded, but today the validation is, did I have a great day at work? When I go home, like in my makeup van, my hairstylist spot, my immediate team who's been with me for a while, did they have a good day? Because they may not have so much at stake as I did, right? Were they happy? Did they enjoy their lunch? And I think I derive like success from there. And as much as people say that, hey, you know, it's a food chain and Bollywood will always be at the top of it, comes OTT and comes television, I actually don't adhere to that at all. I feel I've been able to recognize the true power of what television is, and television makes you a habit. Good or bad is secondary, is a habit, and I want to be that, because only when I can become a habit for someone can I then be able to sort of leave them with some sort of, I can emotionally touch their lives. And I've experienced this firsthand with the shows I've done and the people I've met, like, firsthand. And I feel, what greater joy than that? So these are, I mean, some of the learnings at work and in life. Yeah.
You become a daily member of their family in that sense, right?
You know, more than that, again, an interesting experiment I ran, like, we were in London in December, we'd spoken then, I remember. On a whim, Janki and I were in an apartment across a coffee store, to say, I said, this entire fan-actor relationship is so, I don't know, how do you quantify it or how to be, right? What is cool? Like, I would see Shah Rukh earlier, and like, I would see how Shah Rukh would pose with fans in a selfie, and he would just have a very straight face. And I'd met him one, like, two, three times, but once when I'd met him on his set also, very, very warm and very hospitable. In a selfie, you'd just be very business-like, and you know. And I realized that he's so tough also. He's meeting like 1,000 people every day. Like, how do you even smile? And I feel, but I said, can I break away from what I have, like, what the prototype of an actor-fan relationship should be? Because at the end of the day, it's two human beings meeting. It's one human being who is probably a bit more affected because he has sampled your work over a period of time and they've been affected by you. But when I was able to break that in my head and try to break away from the posturing of being some sort of a star and have a real conversation, I ended up putting up a Facebook, Instagram video saying, hey, I'm here, going to be here tomorrow for half an hour. Come have a coffee. I'll buy you coffee, right? It's something I've done at the end of every television show, except Buddy, I couldn't. It's just, it'd be too many people who show up. Just to thank people and just to be able to understand what ticks them. And we did this in London. We saw like 7 people will show up, 150 people showed up on a 2-degree weather in like a very, an area which is not touristy at all. And I could have real conversations, I think, with about 70% of them. Like, it could be a 2-minute exchange, but I could sense so much which they're gaining, not from you, but something you've given life to in a way. You're one of the... And I felt, why can't I live my life like this without having to posture, without having to be cool? And I constantly am penduling, sort of like, it's a pendulum. I'm still not, I don't know how to authentically be that all the time. I'm struggling, but I want to be that now. Sometimes it becomes hard because the other person is very overwhelmed when they meet you. And then I realize it's also not my job to constantly put everyone at ease, because I'm here for a purpose. But I want to be that. I want to be able to tap into your mind. Why should you only gain from me? Why can't I also understand your life and see how can I provide some hope? Maybe like a good half an hour in a terrible day. So again, that was a great feedback loop where we took back a lot. Also realized the world is a damn good place. People essentially are wanting to share their love. People essentially are lonely. And I feel like these fictional characters give them a lot of hope, give them a lot of like this ideal love. And a lot of times they ask me, is this the kind of partner you are in real life? And I realize people are lonely. And if I can give them some solace or some hope or some like a smile, man, what a crazy amazing job I have. So yeah.
It's also about you being able to genuinely give them attention, right? And to be able to do that, I feel in oftentimes for anyone, it becomes like, okay, do I really want to tire myself out doing that? But the fact that you genuinely said, let me do it in the most organic way. You know, you didn't do
fan meet and greet.
The meet and greet or the meetup, which is generally... It's not what you call a queue. And I feel the fact that you did it organically might have made it simpler for you because you felt like you were genuinely doing it. You were not standing there to do a job. And I guess it'll really show for people who kind of came in there as well. And I feel that's what I meant at the start of this conversation. I said I've always felt like you're very sure is that I feel that you are very genuine. And that genuineness shows to me as you being
sure.
Because when you're really genuine, are you not trying to add layers into being something else, you being yourself? And I guess that's what I meant at the start of this conversation. I said that I can keep going on, but I always have a rule on this show that I get my guests in here for an hour and I talk to them for an hour. I always leave hope for part twos and part threes to happen with every guest. But I have to ask you one question, which I ask all my guests, which is, through this entire period of time, has there been a single piece of advice you got from someone that stuck with you through?
So I, on my phone, I have this, on the notes, I have a section which I call wisdom. And I tend to write down everything from anyone I've heard or an interaction I've had, a learning which I could distill down, right? And there are too many there. But I think something which has been the bedrock of my life, firstly, I think it's two part. First part is, I think again, it's like, I think my strength comes from, I managed to build relationships and find people. I have an eye for being able to, I think, finding people. Like, just case in point, I remember seeing my wife, like, when she was 16, I was 18. And that was the point when I just started doing advertisements and I was fairly popular, had some female attention finally in life. And I saw her, and the first thought which came to me was, hey, life would be so great if I married her. And that wasn't the first thought I had at any point at 18. I don't know why that came to me. And I followed that and I pursued her and eventually we became friends and we're married with a child. I feel all the people who are now the core of my life or center are people or relationships I have chased. Not in as to what I can gain from it, but I felt there's been a strong, I don't know, is it a spiritual calling? Because I read this book, Many Masters, Many Lives, and it spoke about how you're always drawn towards certain people. And I've chased that. I've not let that go. If it's curiosity, I would want to like understand who this person is. So coming back to Janki and I think the greatest advice I've gotten in relationship is, and which we've applied in our lives is, you know, a perfect relationship is not where you're looking at each other and you're smitten in each other's eyes, but where both of you are looking in the same direction, following your own path. I might be paraphrasing, following your own path, but aligned, you know, and in the same direction. And I feel that makes so much sense because we are in this world, you know, we have all these relationships, but essentially we are here to survive as individuals. You know, we find partners, we find friends, and we learn, we give to each other, and we're on the journey together, but we're alone. And the first time I shared this with Janki, she was like slightly, oh, like, you know, it sounds very sort of transactional. But like, I think if you, she went deeper, and then I think it became clear to both of us, it's not transactional at all. So that's something I look forward to in relationships and friendships. That's one. And the second one is, so many things which are flashing in my head right now, but I'm just trying to, it's something I got from my mentor, Dr. Daisaku Ikeda, who's a Buddhist philosopher and guide. Again, I'm paraphrasing, so I can't remember it correctly, but, you know, he speaks about hope, and he says that when every nerve and fiber in your body is oriented, is determined towards what you want to do, there is no way you will not be able to achieve it. And he also spoke about, like, if you don't see the sun, be the sun, S-U-N. And I have worked from that sort of fundamental that I have all these dreams and goals I want in my life. And like, if I follow them conventionally, I should be happy with what little bit I've built for myself. But if you want to open new doors for yourself, and if you find none, like, be that trailblazer, you know. So be the sun. And this is not just at work, this is also in relationships. Be the sun. And that's something I try to work on every day.
Thanks so much for doing this, Nakul. It's been, I know we've spoken about doing this for a while now, and I'm happy we could finally do this, but thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. This is so wonderful.